Today, we are very lucky to have a special guest in the studio with us. We're sitting here with acclaimed novelist Gwen Hyman Rubio, who is truly one of my favorite writers and favorite human beings. You probably know Gwen from her phenomenal bestseller, Icy Sparks, or her follow-up, the lovely novel, The Woodsman's Daughter. Icy Sparks was an Oprah's book club pick and a New York Times notable book. The Woodsman's Daughter was a Book Sense pick and a nominee for the Penn Faulkner, among other awards. Gwen grew up in South Central Georgia, but has been a Kentuckian now for many years, a proud Kentuckian. She and her husband, Angel, live in Versailles with their great little rescue dog, Fritz. Gwen is with us today not only because she's one of our most beloved writers and people, but also because she has a brand new book out. It's called Love and Ordinary Creatures, and it has just been released. Love and Ordinary Creatures is exquisitely written, completely original, and a deeply moving meditation on true love. I believe it is Gwen's best book, populated by a memorable cast of characters we come to count as friends, and a vivid sense of place that allows us to escape into a lush sensory world. I couldn't put it down. Gwen, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for asking me, Silas. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to start us off by reading the first few paragraphs of the book. I want to entice people into this world with the opening.
Okay, I'll read you the first page. When Caruso opens his dark eyes wide, he can will himself above the world. His pupils dilate as he soars back in time, seeing and remembering the Murray River, its muddy, dark waters thick as blood, snaking through the casuarina trees, the sun squatting like a gigantic monolith on their dangling reed-like branches. He feels the heat, a volcanic blast of white, then senses the flurry of wings and the air currents above, below, and around him. With loud, raucous cries, the undulating wave of white breaks over the leafless trees. Yes, Caruso can remember these things, these primordial memories of his life before it changed. The past disappears and the future becomes irrelevant the instant he focuses on Clarissa, lying white and still in the sunroom on the blue chaise longue in front of him. His pupils dilate and contract, pinning with pleasure, while he stares at her round pink shoulder, free of the white silk robe. Clarissa, if she doesn't wake up soon, they'll run out of time. She turns her head slightly. Her red hair parts to expose her white swan neck. On it, a few inches down from her left ear, is a mole, small and black as a papaya seed. The wooden blinds are open. A breeze wafts in from Silver Lake Harbor. Shafts of sunlight pass through the long, wide windows. Outside, there is the low thrum of a fishing boat as it slices through the water. Clarissa, he tries again, his voice more insistent. She promised to take him to the beach. She mumbles and partially covers her face with the curve of her elbow. If he could, he would preen the white hairs on her forearm, then rub his body against the underside of soft pink flesh. She wiggles her dainty feet, and her brightly painted toenails catch his attention. They are orange, the same shocking color as the flowers of Banksia growing wild in the bush beyond the Murray River. If he could, he would draw his beak like a feather over those gems of orange.
I love that. Thank you. That's such a great opening. What do you want readers to know about this book? It's such a beautifully plot-driven, beautifully written and mm-hmm. plot-driven book. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give too much away, so mm-hmm. how much do you want to give away?
Well, I will say that I guess I will go ahead and say this, that it's told through the eyes, in the voice, the point of view of a cockatoo named right. Caruso. And that is an odd thing about the book. And I do think I agree that it's a meditation on true love. It takes place in Ocracoke, which is a part of the Outer Banks of North Carolina. The cockatoo named Caruso was caught in the wild in the bush of Australia as a fledgling. And so he has memories of his life before it changed, his memory of his life in Australia before he was caught. And Clarissa, his companion, she is from Kentucky. She's a chef. And she was born in the mountains of eastern Kentucky, but her family moved to central Kentucky, the bluegrass later on. So those are some of the characters. And it's a love triangle.
Right.
It's a man and a woman and the cockatoo Caruso.
It is an amazing point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because you pull it off. You know, that's an incredibly hard thing to pull off a perspective like this.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing close that I can think of is this great novel called Room by Emma Donoghue, I think's her last name.
Uh-huh.
And it's all told from the point of view of a 5-year-old boy, which is incredibly hard to pull off. You have done her one better and told it from the point of view of cockatoo. How did you manage to do that?
At first, I kind of toyed with the idea of multiple points of view. And because I realized that staying in the voice of the cockatoo would be challenging, and it might be difficult to sustain this voice through the length of a novel.
Sure.
However, when I put pen to paper, his voice came so easily to me.
Mm-hmm.
That I knew right off he would tell his own story. And I thought that in order for me to really get into his head and for the reader to believe the story, I thought he needed to tell his story. But also I knew that he would be a bird and he would be caged, and that would limit his world, and that the novel could possibly become too claustrophobic unless I found a way to broaden his world, to enlarge his world. So for that reason, I had him being captured in the wild in Australia, because then he would have memories of his life in Australia when he was a fledgling, when he was free. I wanted the novel to be filled with loss and longing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted him to be filled with loss and longing, and that would only come from memories of his past life. So that was a way to open up his world somewhat, and I could use poetic license where he could remember all the birds of Australia, which many of which would not be possible, really, and he could remember birds of New Zealand and birds in America,
right.
You know. And then I could play with some magical realism, to broaden his world. And Clarissa, they live on Ocracoke. I thought she could, she's a chef, and he can look at her through the glass windows into her restaurant right behind the house, not far away, and he can watch her as she works.
Mm-hmm.
That would open his world up. She would take him to work with her. He would get to know the people, the staff at the restaurant. And then to broaden his world a little bit more, I included a second storyline of his first owner.
Well, as a reader, I came to care so much for him and to continue to think about him after leaving the book, you know. And I read it, I don't know, more than a year ago, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So I just think he's a wonderful character. And it allows you to talk about the nature of love in such a articulate way, and maybe a way that you couldn't have as easily with a, you know, a human character. So I think that, again, is something that I just love about it. But talk about a challenge of writing from a bird's point of view. Maybe even a bigger challenge is writing a love story and never dipping into sappiness or sentimentality once you don't do that. How hard is it to find that balance?
Well, I tried to control for that, of course. And I did a lot of research on birds, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, after I did all the research, read many books of nonfiction, and saw David Attenborough's 10-part series on that aired on the Nature Channel on KET, on birds. I kind of decided that birds aren't particularly they feel, but they're not sentimental creatures. They right. demand a little bit more respect than that. Mm. So they feel very deeply, and especially parrots. They can live cockatoos for up to 80 years. They have they're incredibly intelligent. They are monogamous. They have one partner for life. They raise their young together. And if you take them from the wild and you put them in a cage, they become neurotic because they're mm-hmm. social creatures. They fly in flocks, and then they bond with one person in particular in a family. And they do feel and express jealousy. And if they are emotionally distressed, they will pluck out their feathers. Hmm. And they probably shouldn't be caged. Mm-hmm. They should fly free.
Right.
So I just didn't want him to be. He's in love, but I hope I keep it under control.
You're definitely
does
there.
It, yeah, okay.
For
Thank
sure.
you.
So. Well, I'm Silas House, and today on Hillbilly Solid, we are speaking with best-selling author Gwen Hyman Rubio, the author of the new book, Love and Ordinary Creatures. You're listening to us on WUKY listener-supported radio, and we're sure glad that you are. Well, Gwen, your books are always just mm-hmm. brimming with mm-hmm. sense of place.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that, you know, when you step into one of your books, you enter that world, whether right. it be Eastern Kentucky or Georgia or now mm-hmm. Ocracoke.
Right.
What made you choose Ocracoke?
What made me choose Ocracoke is I wanted to compare and contrast the island continent of Australia with the small little island of Ocracoke. And you've been to Ocracoke,
haven't you? I have, and I've always wanted to.
Okay, you would like it. It's very quiet, and it's actually a bird sanctuary. And not the Ocracoke Village is developed, of course, and there's not a lot to Ocracoke Village. It's mm-hmm. very small, but the rest of the island is pretty untouched.
Yeah.
So that's why I chose. And they have their own little way of talking to, and I like that,
right.
their own kind of special way of talking that they're trying to hold on to and keep.
Yeah. Well, it's a great choice, a great mm-hmm. setting. You do so much with it. Well, you've been out on the road a little bit with the book already.
Yes.
I know that you consider mm-hmm. yourself somewhat of an introvert, and I really admire that. I think, you know, we live in such an extroverted world where people tell us too much about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know way more about most celebrities than I ever want to know. I can't avoid it, and everybody
uh-huh.
else. You
right.
know, on Facebook and Twitter and everything else. And you were sort of thrust into enormous exposure with your first novel.
Uh-huh.
Was that difficult for you, and how did you come to terms with that?
It was incredibly difficult. I mean, with the Oprah thing, there was a lot of wonder, but there was as much terror involved for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am painfully shy. I mean, painfully shy. And so I just didn't know if I would be able to. First of all, I'm terrified of flying. I will mm-hmm. fly, and I've flown many places, but that's not easy for me. And then being on a TV show was just horrifying, the thought of it. And this is frightening to me right now. So but I guess you push beyond that or you try, but uh-huh. it's not easy for me. It's hard for me.
Right.
And I can get thrown quite easily, and then I babble and act ridiculous. So, 'cause I'm shy.
Well, I think mm-hmm. I think you're incredibly charming mm-hmm. to talk
well,
to. And,
well,
and as an audience member, you know, mm-hmm. the audience member, I don't think knows that about you, you know, because mm-hmm. you do it so well.
Oh.
But I can relate. And I think sometimes the nerves, you know, make you a better speaker, make you a better reader, especially. Do you think?
Have you been told that?
I've been told that it gives you some adrenaline that makes you read, you know.
Well, my aunt, who passed away last year, my father's sister, was an actress. And mm-hmm. she ran theater, studied under Helen Hayes, and ran
wow.
theater in Atlanta and all of that, the Pocket Theater. And she was so hard on me. So after she would work with me, I was just, you know, I performed just, you know, horribly because I couldn't, you know, I couldn't meet her standards.
Right.
So I don't know. So I am very nervous. So I carry a lot of doubt.
Well, you sound great to us. Mm. Well, you mentioned that Clarissa's a chef.
Uh-huh.
And you are a fabulous cook, and your home is it's kind of like a piece of art in its own right. It's so such a wonderful home. You're a great lover of music and painting. Do you consciously seek out art in some way every day in your everyday life?
I think I do. I think I do. And I mean, art can be anything. You walk out the back door and you see a beautiful flower in bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And you're mesmerized by it, and that's your moment of art at that time. Or you cut on the radio and you hear a lovely song, something that you've not heard before.
Right.
So that's your bit of art. It keeps you going. It nourishes one and enriches one, I think, your soul and your spirit.
Mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly important to me as a writer.
Uh-huh.
To surround myself with all different kinds of art.
Right.
I know that you do that, and I love that about you. Before we run out of time, I want to bring us back to Love and Ordinary Creatures. I want as many people to know about this book as possible, because I love it so much and have thought so much about it. I want to point out that it's one of those rare books that is really, it's very lyrical. The reader can sort of luxuriate in the language, but at the same time, it's a real page turner. And how do you find that balance?
That was actually hard to do because, as you know, lyrical writing is difficult. It's slow. You have to slow down for that. It's nuts and bolts. I like to do that too, but I wanted to have music in this prose because it's about birds.
Right. Wow.
So, and then I knew that I had to have. We were going to be in the mind of a cockatoo, and I knew I would have to have something, which would be challenging enough, to entice the reader to turn the pages. So I knew I would have to have a strong plot. So it was a balance trying to work that, well, to manage the two between the lyrical writing and the plot.
Did you listen to a lot of Caruso when you were writing the book? Did you
actually we did.
Yeah.
We brought up my husband, I don't know how to do any of this, but he brought up Caruso on the internet so I could hear him singing.
Right.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
I'm working on a novel right now and my lead character Caruso's her favorite singer, so I'm having to.
Oh, really? You're doing the same thing?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, I'm writing a novel about Willa Cather, the novelist, and she loved Caruso. Yeah. Well, Gwen, I know that you are a fan of Marilynne Robinson, like I am. Mm-hmm. So how has she been important to you?
Well, I went back and reread Gilead when I was working on this book, Love and Ordinary Creatures. And in Gilead, she introduces us to The Diary of a Country Priest by Bernanos.
Yes.
And I got that book and read that. And Caruso, throughout this, is a love story, but Caruso's on a spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the few novels that I have many novels shelved, too, but one of the few novels where I knew what the ending would be. Usually I have no idea of what the ending will be, and I knew that after I read The Diary of a Country Priest.
Oh, great.
So I can thank Marilynne Robinson for Gilead leading me to The Diary of a Country Priest.
And you know, her new book is a love story about the love story of the preacher and his wife. So it's beautiful. It's called Lila.
And she's the one who doesn't fit in to the community.
Exactly.
So that I would like that. I like stories about misfits, people who don't fit in.
Let me know,
who are different. Who are probably shy, right?
Right. Let me know once you read it. I want to hear what you think.
Okay.
Well, again,
do you remember the title?
It's called Lila.
Lila, okay.
Yeah, Marilynne, it just came out. It's just a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize right now, I think, or maybe the National Book Award. Anyway, check it out, Lila by Marilynne Robinson.
Okay, I will, because
after everybody out there reads Love and Ordinary Creatures by Gwen Hyman Rubio, they can read Lila, right?
Right.
Well, thanks so much for being here with us, Gwen.
Thank you for having me, Silas.
It's,
I appreciate
always
it.
Such a pleasure to see you. And I want to encourage everyone to rush out and get a copy of one of the best books of the year, Love and Ordinary Creatures by Gwen Hyman Rubio. It's available everywhere. And thank all of you for joining us here on Hillbilly Solid. Until next time, be good to one another.